Moncrief on News Talk.
For most people, having a cardiac arrest means completely changing your life. Start taking more exercise, watch your diet, avoid stress. But imagine if you had been doing that anyway and you were only 27 years of age. Last December, Aisling Brennan, an Offaly camogie player, collapsed. CPR and a defibrillator saved her life. Aisling, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. Where were you when it happened, can you tell us?
Basically, it was the 29th of December. I'd gone up to a friend's house and we'd actually been planning on going to hike the Devil's Bit. So I was in a friend's house that morning. I don't remember a lot of it, but I was in good form by all accounts. I had no symptoms. It was feeling fine and like that. I had obviously planned to go for a walk that morning. When I suppose I kind of suddenly collapsed.
Yeah, and you just completely collapsed. I mean, you were even, at the time, were you even aware or half aware that you'd collapsed? Were you out?
I wasn't. So I wasn't aware. I think I didn't regain full consciousness until I think it was actually New Year's Eve. So I kind of had no, there was no trigger for me. There was nothing that kind of precipitated it for me.
Yeah.
I was feeling completely fine that morning. Again, by all accounts, I've no memory of actually collapsing. It was that sudden. And for the people around me, just a complete shock for them as well. So yeah. there was no indication that this was going to happen for me, to be honest.
Yeah. So what did your friends do?
So I suppose like that, luckily they jumped into action straight away. I was again very fortunate that there happened to be three people in the house at the time. So they started CPR immediately and were able to do two-person CPR. They immediately rang emergency services, had an ambulance on the way. Like that, they just didn't panic. They just immediately done everything right.
Had they ever done this before? Did they have experience of doing CPR?
They have no, I suppose, healthcare or medical background. Neither of them had ever performed CPR before. I know they said that, you know, the emergency services over the phone obviously were guiding them through, but you know, to have the presence of mind to just start CPR straight away and recognize the seriousness of the collapse, I think initially they thought maybe, you know, I was having a laugh with them or, you know, it might have been a seizure, but they were able to recognize straight away that look, I wasn't breathing, and they needed to act quickly, and thankfully they did.
Yeah, and there was a defibrillator relatively close by.
There was, again, I was very lucky with the circumstances in that, I suppose, around Christmas, a lot of my family were off work. So my friend called my family, they came up and on the way they went to the local hurling pitch and they got an AED, had the presence of mind to think to bring an AED. They brought that down to the house and think they actually administered the first shock before the paramedics even got there.
Right. And then at that, was it from there you were airlifted or did the ambulance bring you some other place?
So I think nearly the whole parish rang an ambulance for me. So I think there was two ambulances. So I think there was about six or seven paramedics that actually came to the house initially. And then, yeah, they airlifted me to Limerick. So I think I was in Limerick within 15 minutes then from then.
Crikey, that's impressive. Now, in Limerick, they put you into an induced coma. Why did they do that?
I suppose what they had said to my family was after having the cardiac arrest, they didn't know what the cause was at that point. They were still doing a lot of testing, but it was basically just to give my brain and my body time to recover from what had happened. I suppose another element of that is that they, because I hadn't regained consciousness, they didn't know the extent of any damage that could have been done. If I had been hypoxic at any time, if, you know, there wasn't enough kind of blood supply to my brain, and if that had any impact on me, and kind of, you know, they didn't know if I would have any brain damage. So basically I was in the induced coma then for, I think it was about 2 days, and then woke up just in time for New Year's Eve.
Oh my word. And why did they decide then to bring you out of the coma?
They've done this thing, it's called a sedation holiday. I suppose I was obviously constantly hooked up to a lot of monitoring, and I suppose they felt that you know, I was getting better. So they'd done a sedation holiday. They lightened the sedation to see how I'd respond. And I think I woke fairly quickly after that. After they lightened the sedation, I actually came around fairly quickly after that.
Yeah, can you remember waking up?
Not at all. No. It's all kind of accounts from my family. They stayed with me from the minute I was in hospital until the minute I was discharged. But, what they had said to me is that I woke up and I was convinced my friend had pushed me over, that I'd fallen. You know, and what the doctors had said to them was, you know, tell her straight away, look, you've had a cardiac arrest, you're in ICU, you're in Limerick. And I think they had to repeat that, many, many times to me. It wasn't really going into my mind that I had a cardiac arrest. Obviously, like, I'm 27. I think it's the last thing you think. And I think I was probably in a bit of disbelief as well. So, I have no memory really until a couple of days later of being in hospital. Really, I don't remember ICU or waking up or anything like that.
Yeah. And excuse me. And that couple of days later, had you been able to process what had happened to you? Because it must have been an extraordinary shock to you.
Yeah, I think it was only when I was in CCU. And again, look, my family and friends were a constant presence there for me. But, you know, there was one day, a couple of days into staying in CCU, and I was looking around the ward at, you know, people in their 60s and 70s. Mm. I was probably 30 years younger than anyone else on the ward. And I think that's when it kind of started to sink in. I don't know, has it maybe fully sank in for me yet? But it was only really then that I kind of had a chance to think about what had happened. Obviously, you know, I'd a central line in, I was on constant telemetry, and I think it was only really then that it hit me that something serious had happened, you know?
Yeah. Did it make you feel vulnerable?
I suppose it did. Like, going into Christmas time, obviously it's a busy period, but I had actually been training for a marathon that I was planning to do. It's only in a couple of weeks in Rome. So I would have probably felt the fittest I'd ever felt going into, you know, the end of December. I was doing a lot of running. I was back in doing pre-season with Offaly Camogie as well. And I would be, you know, going to the gym a couple of times a week. So if you'd asked me the 28th of December, I probably would have said I was the fittest and the most healthy I've been in my life, you know?
Yeah. And then it all just is. Now, presumably, though, the more you thought about it, the more questions you had. And you were at some point then transferred to the Beacon, as I understand it. Were they able to give you any answers?
I suppose not really. They're still kind of, the investigations are ongoing. I suppose initially they just couldn't find a cause structurally with my heart. They said everything was perfect. I think even my ECGs post the cardiac arrest were nearly perfect. So they couldn't really find a cause. They still don't know what the cause was. Even following up with my cardiologist a couple of weeks ago, he still doesn't know why this happened. I'm still going for kind of ongoing investigations. They made the decision then to send me to the Beacon to have this ICD implanted. So it's an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. It's basically like a little kind of battery powered device, and it's inserted right beside my rib cage, with a tracing wire into my heart. Basically, that works like an AED would work. So it's an internal defibrillator. And what it does is it just tracks and monitors my heart rate. So if something like this was to happen again, if I was to have an abnormal heart rhythm, it would just deliver a small shock if it needed to.
My word. Okay. Did you, when you were finally released from hospital and you went home, Aisling, did you think, should I go back to doing sport again? Were you at all nervous about that?
Yeah, to be honest, it was when I was in Limerick more so than in the Beacon. I suppose I had maybe more time to think about it. I didn't think I would be returning to sport. I thought this was going to completely I suppose, changed my life. I wasn't sure with regards to work. I work in the mental health services down in Waterford. I wasn't sure if I'd ever be able to return to my job, return to sport, you know, like even in CCU, like I wasn't even able to walk up and down the corridor without nearly feeling a little bit breathless. So I wasn't sure what my life was going to look like, I suppose, coming out of hospital. But yeah, I think it was just the support of my friends and family. I don't think there was a person that, you know, in my community that didn't send a message or send a bit of support to me, which was huge for me as well. And look, once I had the kind of the ICD implanted, it was always on my mind that, look, sport is a huge part of my life. And I was very eager to get back to it. Like the surgeon who operated on me, Professor Walsh, he was speaking to my dad after the surgery. And, you know, they were talking about, I suppose, you know, how fit I had been and sport and return to sport. And he said, look, she's got a second chance at her life now and she has to live it. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, really.
Yeah. And how now you have started training again and talking out a bit. You, as you say, you were like the fittest you ever were on the 28th of December. Has this set you back a bit? I imagine it has.
It definitely has. Yeah, I think Jack Maher, our off-league camogie trainer, would tell you that. You know, but look, they were brilliant. I went back in with Offaly kind of towards the end of January, only intending to go and watch a few sessions and see what happens. And look, it wasn't long before I picked up the hurl again and was mad to get in for a few drills, but just kind of gradually integrated back in. And look, I was feeling good. I felt I was in, you know, a good enough place that I felt able to get back in with the girls and to get back in with the panel. Started back training kind of the end of January, looking towards our league campaign, which started the 9th of February, I think it was around then. We've played three rounds of league now. The first round, I think I played about 15 minutes and like that, look, you know, I wasn't great. I didn't have a great game. Definitely was feeling, you know, the fitness levels definitely weren't there. But like that, I was talking to my dad when I was coming off the field and he was kind of saying, look, Aisling, you know, a month ago you were lying in the bed and we didn't know if you'd talk and walk normally or you know, be here. Like, so I think it's just giving myself a bit of time and just being grateful to be able to get back out on the pitch with the girls it's unbelievable, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine you're improving as you go. You're feeling a little bit better every day.
Yeah, definitely. Like I've been working hard with the strength and conditioning coach. He's been brilliant, Ronan Moore. He's been checking in with me nearly weekly, just seeing how I'm feeling, just in terms of managing my load and making sure I'm not kind of diving back in at the deep end as well. And just taking it kind of session by session and seeing how I'm feeling. But definitely even compared to the end of January to how I'm feeling now, you know, I feel like I'm gradually getting back to where I was. I'm back out running and, you know, running my 5Ks and doing bits like that. So, yeah, I'm feeling good, thank God. Feeling able for it.
And I assume they've investigated to see perhaps was there any family history or anything like that?
Yeah, I suppose like we have no kind of immediate family history of anything cardiac. You know, there's nothing kind of genetic, nothing like that in my family. I suppose what the hospital in Limerick had said was that it would be very important for I have two sisters, close in age to me and a brother, just to have them tested as well, just to see. But like there is no family history of any heart kind of conditions or anything like that. So that's why I think it was such a shock. It really did come out of absolutely nowhere for us.
Yeah. You know? Now, and to kind of end where we came in, the importance of CPR. Like, are you fairly convinced, Aisling, that that saved your life?
Absolutely. Look, there's no doubt that it was, I suppose you call it the bystander CPR that kept me alive, for the paramedics to be able to do their job. And you know, what a brilliant job that they done as well. And the care that I got was fantastic. But look, it was the initial response and how quickly that they responded and started CPR. That's what saved my life. Like within my own club, our club secretary, Sarah King, she was brilliant. She actually organized CPR courses for within the club in I think they were early February, and I know there was great uptake within the club to do them courses, which is brilliant. Like, it just shows that there's measures that can be taken to improve people's knowledge, you know, about kind of basic life-saving skills, and there's definitely a desire there to learn as well. Like, a lot of people probably, you know, they might know the basics of CPR, but they might never have seen an AED, and that can be quite daunting. So even if you do a CPR course, you're familiarizing yourself with an AED. They're very simple to work, and I think that might be an element that's daunting to some people, but I suppose that's why the CPR courses are so important, and they're so easy to organise and run within every community. You know, it's a life-saving skill that absolutely everyone should have, no matter what age you are, because it doesn't matter what age you are, you know, it's proof it can happen to anyone, I suppose.
Yeah, and and I assume those courses, are they like, they're not complicated, is it like a day or so to learn how to do this?
It's a couple of hours. You know, I think most of them are 4-hour courses. You know, I think we have someone locally that's actually trained and offers courses within the community. It's just about, I suppose, building awareness and having it maybe as a yearly thing that clubs do. And as well as that, making sure that there is AEDs available to every club. Like, there's not many places in Ireland where you're not a mile or two from a GAA pitch, and the importance of having an AED to hand just in case something like this happens, and that people are familiar with, I suppose, how to access them, who they need to contact to access them, and that they're there and available to use, and how important they are as well.
Yeah. Are you still processing what happened to you?
I think so. I don't think it's fully hit me yet. Mm. You know, I think that I've just been extremely fortunate that life hasn't changed that much for me. Look, obviously physically, you know, it's had an impact, and obviously it's had a psychological impact, but I've just been able to return to work, to return to sport. And I don't have the fear that, you know, this is going to recur. I think you can't really live your life fully if you're thinking that something like this is going to happen again, or you're living in fear. So I think I'm just trying to live my life and just be happy and be grateful for being able to be here. There's a lot of people that wouldn't have survived probably what I did, and I'm just extremely lucky that the people around me were able to, you know, essentially save my life and to act so quickly and respond so well to what happened.
Indeed. Aisling, we wish you all the very best and more power to you. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was the Offaly Camogie player, amongst many other things, Aisling Brennan there. Somebody's texting to say Christian Eriksen had an ICD fitted. This is a little gizmo that Aisling's had installed after he collapsed at the Euros and he returned to professional football. And someone else says that woman is amazing. A perfect example of why we all need to do a first aid course. Well, indeed.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.